hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and you're called to die to be. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a part of the diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog of diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be warning. And you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on lightresistanceradio.com, with lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots and lots to talk about. I hate tyranny. I hope you do too. And one of the biggest forms of tyranny in so-called free society are the depredations imposed upon us by these people who write traffic tickets. These are out of control bureaucrats. And, the fact is they've got most of the power. And if we don't fight back, they can bully you, and they can issue you a ticket. And if you, at least in the People's Democratic Republic of Ontario, if you don't pay your ticket in due course, why, they'll prevent you from renewing your license next year. It's all state thuggery and blackmail. Now, a lot of people put up with it and say, oh, well, what can you do? You can't fight City Hall. Well, the fact is, we can't fight City Hall alone. That's true. But I think we have to, first of all, fight every ticket. You know, if even a significant minority of people fought tickets, the system would collapse. And good. That's not a bad thing. So that's the first thing you can do. Fight every ticket. Then it's important that you protest. You see, they try to get a psychological advantage on you. They'll say, oh, well, you broke the law. Well, the law's stupid in most cases. Most parking restrictions, in my opinion, are stupid. And I'm in the process of fighting one of these things right now.
I was up in Stratford, Ontario, a few weeks back, and I parked near the theater in an area on a street where it was residential, and where I'd parked on numerous occasions previously. And apparently, it had been re-signed, or I guess redesignated. So now, apparently, it was by permit only. But this was in the middle of the day. This wasn't at night at the time of. And every resident there has a driveway. So this is the sort of that, you know, if you want to collect fines, you just pass enough rules that people will eventually somehow violate them. And, you know, presto, you've got a good reason to fine some poor person. And that's what happened to me. Well, it was only a $10 fine. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I can get this settled right on the spot. So I beetled over to the City Hall. And I was at about 20 to 5. Well, I knocked on one door, it's closed, knocked on another, it's closed. It's a big old building in the center of Stratford, Ontario. And finally somebody told me, oh, well, they close at 4:30. Well, it's just about 20 to 5. So I thought, well, that's pretty good life for bureaucrats, you know. Executive hours, don't make things easy for people. So, okay, I couldn't get it settled on the spot. So I went across the road to the Stratford Tourist Bureau, and I spoke to them. Well, they weren't really all that sympathetic. Oh, well, there's free parking lots. I said, yes, I know there are, but in some places. But the street on which I parked did not strike me as a place that would have to be so designated, and almost certainly anybody parked there was going to the Stratford Shakespearean Festival, as I was. It's a major theater. In fact, it's world famous. So, I mean, it's not exactly a nice way, or even a smart way, in my opinion, to treat paying customers. And people who actually made what would otherwise be a sleepy little Ontario, maybe market town with a little bit of business of supporting surrounding agriculture, into quite the place with a lot of upscale restaurants and upscale shops and so on. It's all the tourists, or you know, almost all the tourists, who come up there. You know, you'd think, be nice to people. Anyway, as I said, I didn't get much of a... didn't get much sympathy. Well, begin to realize that, you don't get much sympathy because people have fallen into a complacent, compliant, bureaucratic mindset. So the other day I received this letter. Oh, yes, my ticket was for $10. Okay, here's the letter addressed to me from Stratford. Dramatically different. Oh, ho, ho, ho. It's unsigned, though. Well, actually, it's signed City of Stratford. I hate that. I hate if someone's going to make threats or, you know, tell me I'm being fined and I've got to do this or I've got to do that. Put your name on the bottom. Are you a sniveling coward? Well, of course they are. Bureaucrats are, for the most part, sniveling cowards. The fact is, if people were held to account for what they do, they just might be a little bit nicer. Wouldn't you think? You know, it's easy if you're flying by anonymously in a car to scream an obscenity at a person you'll never see him, will never see you. But if you actually were face-to-face with that person, you might be a little more polite. Well, anyway, not to read the whole boring letter, but it goes on to say that my vehicle is parked unlawfully or stopped contrary to bias. They don't even, they're not quite sure what the offense was. The amount indicated on the fine is not being paid. Well, yeah, no, it's only a couple of weeks ago. Unless payment of a notice or a notice of intention to appear in court for the purpose of entering a plea and having a trial of the matter is received by the above date. October. Then what's the threat? A conviction will be recorded without further notice. On conviction, you'll be required to pay the fine plus a court cost. What court costs? The court's already in session. What are the court costs? An administrative fee is payable if the fine goes into default, and the information may be provided to the credit bureau. Okay, lots of threats, eh? Now, nice to make threats and not sign it. Anyway, what does it say? Oh, yes, okay. Supposing I wish to fight the ticket. Pursuant to Section 17, sub 1 of the Provincial Offences Act, your agent must appear in person to set a trial date. You cannot, underline, cannot set a trial date by mail, fax, phone, or email. Okay, well, and there, of course, is the rub. Yes, you've got a right to a trial. But as you're out of town, you or your agent have to come up. Well, okay, so I'd have to hire an agent, or I would have to take the trip up there. Let me see, that probably, round trip cost me $30-$40 in gas, my time is valuable, probably a meal. Just to set a date would cost me, probably $60-$70, and that's assuming my time isn't worth anything. I can't put a monetary value on the time. So actually, it's typical thuggery, addressed as, but of course you have your rights. Well, yes, but to exercise my rights, now why can't this be done over the phone, and confirmed by an email, or be done by fax? Oh, no. They want to make it as impossible as possible for people to assert their rights. And that this is typical bureaucratic thuggery, which has to be fought. Well, okay, what do I do? Oh, yes, by now, but the fine is $30. It magically went up from 10 to 30 because I didn't pay it right on the spot. Well, I couldn't very well pay it on the spot, even if I wanted to, because bloody City Hall was closed. You see, this is what I mean about state thuggery and bullying. Okay, now I know most people would say, well, don't get upset about it. It's only $30. Write them a check. Yes, one could do that. However, this just encourages them. So my thinking is this. You cause me pain. Well, I'm going to try to find a way to cause you pain. And perhaps if enough of us cause you pain, you may be better to us. You might treat us well, because after all, we're the fools that support your town. You know, and the fact is, I don't have to go to the theater. So what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to write the town mayor a letter. I'm also going to write the Better Business Bureau, Chamber of Commerce, and I'm going to write the theater. And this is roughly going to be the content of my letter. Look, this summer I've gone twice to Stratford. I have on both occasions seen two plays, and I've gone with a friend. Each of those, the tickets for each of those plays cost more, give or take a few dollars, around $600 for the day. So that's $1,200 for the two events of the summer. Each time we had a supper, which came to a little over 100, so that we're now up to 1,400. We went to a couple of nice boutique shops and spent, $20-$30 more on chocolate and things like that. And went to the local Tim Hortons. There's another $5 or so, plus gas to gas up the car. So very close $1,500. And I'm going to say, you'll get your $30 with my eternal curse, but you'll never get another cent out of me because I won't be coming back. And I know it's only one person and his guest, but there will be others. And I noticed that even though all four plays I saw, and this isn't always the case, were very good, they're very good productions, the theaters were not full. On none of the four occasions that I was at the theater this summer was the theater full. In fact, for three of the four performances, and I didn't get my tickets till, I would say, almost the last minute, a couple of days before a performance, I got very good seats. My point is, the theater is, let's say, a fairly limited set of people that are interested in live theater. And it's not, so you've got a limit, you know, it's not like a coffee that, you know, maybe 80% of the population is in the market for a cup of coffee. Theater's not like that. Okay, so we've got a limited market. Furthermore, not everybody who's interested can afford it. So, okay, that limits the market further. Then, most people have to travel to Stratford. There's not a great local population, so most people, like me, are coming as tourists. Some even stay overnight. Not me, but some do. So that puts even more money in. The point I want to make is, we bring a lot of money. Treat us right. And we're not being treated right by behavior like this. Can I call you back a couple of hours? I'm on the radio. Anyway, treat us right. And I want to make that point to the Chamber of Commerce. I want to make that point to the mayor. I also want to make that point to the director of the theater. But we tourists like myself, or out of towners, or whatever you want to call us, theater patrons, we spend a lot of money. But I will not be I'm not prepared to put up with being bullied. I'm not prepared to be shaken down, like some gangster highwayman. And you can say, oh well, it's the law. Okay, it's the law. That's your law, and I will be back. And of course, I suppose the smart aleck might say, well, what does it matter? It's only one person. Well, okay, it's two, because I came with a friend. But okay, it's only two people. But this sort of revolt doesn't have to spread to that many people. Because I've been a patron of the theater for ages and ages, I know it's an ongoing battle to get an audience, simply because, number one, the tickets are expensive. Number two, it involves a trip. Yeah. And I'm by no means, I come from, about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half away. I'm by no means the furthest at all. So for many people, it's a bit of a big deal. Well, you don't want to be further bullied and oppressed. It's that simple. And if enough people say, well, no, I'm not going to take it. You be nasty to me, I'm not coming back. And that's my position. And I think we as citizens, if you want to live in a free country, you've got to fight for your rights. Then Doug Christie, my great friend, who was the lawyer for so many of the outstanding free speech cases in the 80s, 90s, and the first decade of the 21st century, always said, don't look to charters of rights and freedoms or bills of rights or constitutions for your freedoms. Don't consult them. You really only have those freedoms you're prepared to fight for. And that's right. If you're prepared to give up your freedoms to some scolding bureaucrat, or sorry, even better, anonymous bureaucrat, hey, bullies are glad to beat up on the weak. If you're weak, they'll beat up on you. If you acquiesce, hey, why not? They don't care whether you're happy or not. And that's the issue. So what we have to do, and I'm always looking for creative solutions. If anybody out there has a good idea, please email it to me. That's paul@paulfromm.com. paul@paulfromm.com. We've got to look for ways to hurt them. It's a matter of pain. They can inflict pain on us. All right. We have to find ways to inflict pain on them. And in my own little way, I won't be going back. And unless I get my money back. And I think, if enough people dug in their heels and said, no, you're not going to treat me like that. I'm the cow that feeds your bloated belly there. It's my resources, my wealth that you're taking.
Well, you better respect me. And if you don't respect me, well, I won't be back. And okay, you know, of course, they can console themselves. Oh, it's only one guy. Yeah, it's only it might only be one guy. But, you know, if enough people take it up, it'll be more than one guy. Well, the political correctness, especially on campuses, goes from lunatic to beyond lunatic. I don't very often particularly like George Will's writing. I think he's a bit of a milquetoast and not a great conservative, not even much of a conservative. He has written, a really good column about the latest absurdities at Yale University. He says, summer brought no respite for academics committed to campus purifications, particularly at the institution that is the leader in the silliness sweepstakes. I like that. Silliness sweepstakes. And that's Yale. Its Committee on Art in Public Spaces has discovered that a stone carving that has adorned an entrance to Sterling Memorial Library since it opened 86 years ago has become not appropriate. Oh, I love that politically correct term of disapproval. It's not appropriate or inappropriate. What does that mean? Well, who knows? Who knows what it means? Nobody can tell you. It's just, it's the ultimate in political correctees and Orwellian language. Language that does not convey content, but only an emotion. So you know it's bad, whatever it is, not appropriate. The carving, according to Yale Alumni Magazine, depicts a hostile encounter. A Puritan pointing a musket at a Native American. Actually, the Native American and the Puritan are looking not hostilely at each other, but into the distance. See? So they're not even really in a conflict, but what if they were? Still, one can't be too careful. So the musket has been covered with stone. This is a unilateral disarmament. The Native American's weapon, a bow, has not been covered up. Perhaps Yale thinks that armed white men are more triggering, the academic speak, meaning unsettling, to the emotionally brittle, and I like that as a definition. As a word I first came upon late last year in this special current meaning. Trigger is not a thing, as in what you pull on a firearm. Or in a more general sense, a verb, as in to set off. The explosion triggered panic. But it means to upset. If you say, I was triggered, it didn't mean that somebody pulled on my nose like a part of a gun. No, it simply meant that I was upset. I'm a fragile soul, and you, it's your fault for triggering me. National Review Online, Kyle Smith writes, George Will, Droley worries that Yale might be perpetuating harmful stereotypes. If such campus folderols merely added to what Samuel Johnson called the public stock of harmless pleasure, Americans could welcome a new academic year the way they welcomed new burlesque acts. Unfortunately, the descent into institutions of learning into ludicrousness is symptomatic of larger social distempers that Frank Ferruti has diagnosed abroad as in America. Ferruti is a professor emeritus in England and is the author of What Happened to the University? A Sociological Exploration of Its Infantilization. And I think this is a very accurate description of what's happening in institutions of higher learning, which should be challenging people to get into intellectual debates, to explore ideas they may not have explored before or even heard of before. It's to challenge people. Instead, it
it infantilizes them. And that's not a good thing. However, it does allow for all sorts of tyrannical suppression of free speech. Will goes on to say, writing in the American Interest, he cites a warning issued to Oxford University postgraduate students about the danger of vicarious trauma, which supposedly results from hearing about and engaging with the traumatic experiences of others. So if somebody tells me about a traumatic experience that they say they've had, well, I can be traumatized too, vicariously. This, Baroudi says, is symptomatic of the medicalization of almost everything in universities that strive to be therapeutic. Universities are promoting theories and practices that encourage people to interpret their anxieties, distress, and disappointment through the language of psychological deficits. This generates self-fulfilling diagnoses of emotionally fragile students. They demand mental health services on campuses that are replete with trigger warnings and safe spaces to insulate students from discomforts, such as the depiction of a musket. A student would be so triggered or upset that they have to, he or she has to slink off or flee to a safe space. Now, this it really is developing neurotic people who can't function in the real world, where there will be things that genuinely upset and challenge people. Then, what academics perceive as, quote, an expanded set of problems track right into. Right along with the exponential growth of the diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders. Yes, the list of mental disorders, it used to be simply behavioral problems. If somebody's lazy, he's got an attention deficit disorder. No, he's not. He's just lazy. It's not something that has to be treated except perhaps with a lecture or a good swift kick in the rear end. The socialization of children, which prepares them to enter the wider world, has been shifted from parents to primary schools and secondary schools, and now to higher education, which has embraced the task that Professor Faruti calls re-socialization through the altering the norms that undergraduates grew up with. Okay, there's a little wordy there. This is done by using speech codes and indoctrination to raise awareness about defects the students acquired before coming to campuses determined to purify undergraduates. That is, by politically correct indoctrination and speech codes or restrictions to prevent them from saying inappropriate things or hearing inappropriate things. Often, however, students arrive with little moral ballast, bequeathed by parents who thought their role was, Faruti argues, less to transmit values than to validate their children's feelings and attitudes. This emphasis on validation, he says, runs in tandem with a risk-averse regime of child-rearing, the unintended consequence of which has been to limit opportunities for the cultivation of independence and to extend the phase of dependence of young people on adult society. Yes, by infantilizing young people, we increase, ironically, we're not doing something good to them, we're increasing their period of dependence. The therapeutic university, says George Will, the therapeutic university's language, students are vulnerable to routine stresses and difficulties that are defined as traumas, also becomes self-fulfilling. As a result, says George Will, students experience a diminishing sense of capacity for moral agency, for self-determination. This can make them simultaneously passive, immersing themselves into groupthink, and volatile, like the mobs of Middlebury College, Claremont McKenna College, University of California, Berkeley, and other schools that disrupt uncongenial speakers, right? Speakers who have been identified as triggering, that is, saying things that that might upset them. That is, challenge the nonsense they've been taught, or that they perhaps have been bribed. Hence, universities provide trigger warnings that facilitate flights into safe spaces. Ferrutti quotes the Oberlin College student who says, "There's something to be said about exposing yourself to ideas other than your own, but I've had enough of that." Wow. Times do, however, change, as the Yale Alumni Magazine delicately intimated when it said the stone now obscuring the Puritan's musket, quote, can be removed in the future without damaging the original carving. And the future has come with strange speed to New Haven. In a peculiar recent letter in the Wall Street Journal, a Yale official says the university is removing the stone that a construction project team has placed on the stonework, by clearly suggesting implausibly that this team acted on its own. The letter contradicts the magazine's report that the covering up was done because the Committee on Art and Public Spaces deemed the carving not appropriate. The letter, which says the uncovering carving will be moved to where it can be studied and contextualized, speaks volume about the Yale's context. And it speaks volumes about universities that are slowly descending into a form of madness. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Go ahead and play some songs for a musical interlude this evening. Why don't we play Heather Miles and No One's Gonna Love You Better. Once we can suppress this ad, of course.
So you miss the big city? I don't miss much.
Yes, there it is. Captain called for help. If we don't break through the storm,
that's a great duet by Heather Miles and Merle Haggard, No One's Gonna Love You Better. Why don't we play a tune, another tune by Heather Miles, Who Did You Call Darling To Last Night? Heather Miles, very talented country and western singer from California. Who Did You Call Darling To Last Night? This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to play one more tune for our musical interlude this evening, and this is Dawn Sears, Leaving and Saying Goodbye. Dawn Sears.
Thank you. badly. But wouldn't get 10 feet till I'd come running back like a runaway child who's afraid to cross the street. My mind might tell my lips to say it's over, but my heart would only say it's a lie and say,
that's Don Sears, Leaving and Saying Goodbye. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, our good friend Monica Schaefer has been dealt another blow. And just a little bit of background. Monica is a very talented former conservation officer and violinist, and she has taught violin for years to private students in her hometown up in the mountains in Jasper, Alberta. And a very well-liked person. She's a very committed person to the community. She, over the years, volunteered for all sorts of things, contributing her musical talent very often free of charge to benefits and old folks' homes and good causes and so on. She's also very dedicated environmentalist. She ran 4 times for the Green Party. I'm not a Green Party person myself, but just to give you an idea, that Monica is a very giving, friendly, dedicated person. So you say, well, how can a nice lady like that be in trouble? Well, you might ask. Because in this age of intolerant political correctness, she had an idea. Oh my gosh, you can't have ideas. Who do you think you are? Yes. Well, she grew up. She's of German origin. Her parents immigrated from Germany. They're both in the medical profession, she grew up with all the usual nonsense in the schools. Perhaps not as bad as today, but you know, with her German name, you know, Heil Hitler, and comments like that. And she'd been buying the stuff from, you know, half-baked history courses that talked about, you know, the the gas chamber and the Diary of Anne Frank and all that sort of stuff. So being a, you know, like many teenagers, you know, a little bit, well, you know, self-righteous and, you know, and people, you don't blame young people for, you know, feeling passionately about something. But she would say to her parents, why didn't you do something? How could you have let this happen? Now, this is, you know, I won't say childish, but a little unrealistic. Her parents were themselves only teenagers during World War II. So, I mean, you know, what's a 16-year-old going to do about the country's policies? Well, what her mother said to her on several occasions was, "We didn't know." Now, in retrospect, she sees that was almost a double-edged response, because we didn't know, not because we were ignorant, and any more time you don't know all that's going on, but they didn't know because it wasn't happening. But anyway, time went on, and over the years, Monica became liberated, I should say enlightened. And in June of 2016, she made a video in both English and German. And it's a very cute, and I mean that in a nice sense, a very cute, moving little video called "Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And she apologizes to her long dead mother and father for having blamed them, having been a self-righteous, you know, little girl, and having blamed them for not having done nothing. Because now she knows that the new religion of Holocaust basically didn't happen. At least not the way we're told. Well, you might have thought that a nuclear bomb had gone off in Jasper. Many in the town turned against her. And what really hurt was, many of these people had been lifelong, or at least for the duration of 30, 35 years, friends or colleagues. What's very very interesting is that Monica was a known quantity and well liked in town. That's important. I have often thought, and I might be wrong about this, but I've often thought that it's easier to shun or dislike or denounce somebody you don't know. Somebody tells you Mr. Smith, who lives on the other side of the city, is this or that. It's, you know, it may be easier to pass that on and say, yeah, that's Mr. Smith, he's a, you know, whatever. But if you know the person, isn't there a bit of a disconnect? Well, I would have thought so. But no. The man who was the president of the Legion, who had been a Socialist Party or NDP Party candidate, who had traveled with Monica to all candidates' meetings to save money when in several elections they both contested. Who knew her? And she wouldn't say he was a friend, but certainly a good acquaintance with whom she cooperated on numerous things in the past. Well, he banned her from the Legion, which is, I don't believe he had the power to do, but he did. And that's not just being banned from a watering hole. It's being in a small town. The Legion is a place where people get together for small concerts, for musical gigs, and so on. And Monica had been part of several bands, and so she was not able to either attend or play at the Legion. He then actually said that she should not be allowed to live in that town. Now, fortunately, he doesn't have the power to effect that, but just the thought, because she had a different opinion. Many people shunned her. Her musical students, all probably under community pressure, abandoned her. Not because she was a bad teacher, they loved her. Or a bad person, they liked her. But she had now become a witch. Well, you know, the equivalent of a witch. Now, the interesting thing is, Jasper is not typical Alberta. Alberta is, especially small town and rural Alberta, is pretty conservative, pretty individualistic, rough and ready. And normally, a small town would rally around somebody like Monica, or else take the view, well, I don't know, about her views on the Holocaust, but she's a nice person, or she's entitled to her views, or, well, I don't agree with her, but I, you know, those relatively mature live-and-live-let-live approaches to life. You know, like, you know, I don't agree with her, at least I don't think I agree with her, but, you know, she's got a right to her opinion. And that used to be standard Canadian fare. Yeah, there's nothing particularly radical about that idea. That, you know, I may not agree with you, but you've got a right to your opinion. You've got a right to say what your opinion is. Well, that's one of the evil things that political correctees, and let me think. This came in 71, so 45 years of Jewish lobby-inspired anti-hate laws has done to this country. It's eroded that very mature, solid response. That I may not agree with what you have to say, but you've got a right to say it. I'm not going to punish you because I don't agree with you. I'm not going to try to ruin your life. Well, they did their best to ruin her life. Suggest she ought to be driven out of town, to ban her from certain places. She had worked for several years to get the town to issue busking permits. Now, busking is that practice of usually it involves a musical instrument, like taking a violin or an accordion or a guitar, and setting up in a park or on a sidewalk and playing music, and you leave a box or your guitar or violin case there on the ground, and people, if they like what they hear, toss in a few coins or a few dollars or whatever. The town of Jasper had banned busking, but under her lobbying, decided to introduce, to legalize it and to issue permits. Well, she was one of the first to apply for a permit in the summer of 2016, and lo and behold, she was turned down. Yes, she was turned down on the basis that her views were not inclusive. Now, what her views have to do, inclusive or otherwise, with playing a violin, God only knows. And you see, this is almost communist punishment of people for having the wrong views. Nobody would suggest that Monica was not a good violin player. I mean, she'd be a town fixture and a teacher for years. So it was not that somehow Monica had failed the test and just wasn't any good. In fact, that's the wonderful thing about busking. It's self-correcting. I mean, if you really are awful, people will probably not give you much money or give you any money at all. So it's the ultimate free market. Anyway, she was denied the permit, clearly for political reasons, because her ideas were not inclusive. Now, if you actually analyze that accusation, it shakes out to be nonsense. What would be an inclusive idea? I don't know. And any statement of opinion probably excludes other opinions. You know, if I say I am a nationalist, well, I guess those who are globalists would not feel included. If I say I'm a globalist, well, then those of us who are nationalists would not feel included. It's insane. Well, anyway, the latest in the Monica Schaefer story. A group called the Yellowhead Regional Arts Festival Society. Monica had applied to attend, to play there. They sent her a letter, and it said, Yellowhead Regional Arts Festival Society is a non-for-profit, I think they mean not-for-profit, organization that promotes a safe learning environment for members within the communities of the Yellowhead region, that's that western part of Alberta. After careful consideration, the board thinks that your presence at our event would not be the correct fit for our organization at this time. So the Yellowhead Regional Arts Festival Society promotes a safe learning environment. What's that? A safe learning environment. Surely they ought to be trying to promote a challenging environment. Safe learning environment. How would Monica not fit that? That she's never beaten anybody up. She's not likely to take her fiddle and wail somebody on somebody's head. How? All this basic, this is
an evasive way of saying, we don't like your views. Well, Monica wrote back, please explain to me exactly how my presence would not be the correct fit for your organization. Are you implying that my presence with my violin on the stage in Hinton would somehow be dangerous to the audience members? Are you suggesting that I might lose control of my violin bow and poke somebody in the eye? I wonder if your fear stems from any of the numerous fundraisers in the past at which I've donated my time and music and gas for the benefit of the Yellowhead Rotary Arts Festival, as it used to be called. What safety concerns were there when so many of my violin students entered the festival in past years, thereby making this festival viable? Why are you hiding behind the anonymity of the YRAF, that's the Yellowhead Regional Arts Festival Society Board? Who's pressuring you to make such a decision? Who among your board is doing this? What are your names, please? And did you tell my fellow musicians with whom I was to perform that they, by association, were also not the correct fit? You have the audacity to then wish me all the best in my future musical endeavors after seeking to destroy my current musical endeavors? Your letter smacks of the Orwellian doublespeak, promotes a safe learning environment. The level of cowardice is shrouding your identity is astounding. The people on my extensive BCC list will be very interested in your explanation of why I should not be allowed to volunteer my time and modest talent at your fundraiser show on September 29th, for which I was willing to spend my money to get there, all for your society's benefit. Well, I think Monica is dealing with exceedingly frightened, stupid people. And I'm certainly going to be suggesting to my extensive list, as I'm sure Monica is to hers, to give them a piece of your mind. You know, that's the least we can do. We may not be able to change their opinion, but let them know that we know and we think they're disgusting, low-life cowards. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
This was, I think, a great alternative to heart medication. Not that I am a doctor, and for some, there is no choice, but again, someone like me, I am so far pleased with the results.